Is that on? Okay, good. Well, here we are, that time of year again, Thanksgiving, where my mind, I think, first goes to sitting around a table as a youngster with parents asking me, "What are you thankful for?" And me going, "I don't have to go to school." So then, I guess, we have to grow up after that and ponder the meaning of thankfulness and gratitude. It came to my mind as I was sitting up here listening to the reflection words. And the odd thing about the world, and I guess this we'll get to close to what I'm getting at, is that there's a difference between gratitude and gratefulness for receiving something and then letting it go, and living out of a sense of gratitude for life. And that we live in a world that at times may foster that sense of gratitude for life and encourage that sense of gratitude for life itself. If our seventh principle were the highest value in our world, maybe that would be even enhanced even more. We also live in a world, it seems to me at times, that diminishes, not necessarily that we're grateful for individual things that happen in our lives, but diminishes living out of a sense of gratitude. And to stay with the atmosphere of people and our mindsets and not drift to reasons why, but I thought it was noteworthy that there was a moment in time in our recent past when it seemed to me the whole world celebrated. And when that happens, when the whole world celebrates, at least what is presented to us in media, when the whole world celebrates and there's dancing across the world, then that lets me know that there was a force that was hindering that from happening. Wherever we fall and thinking about it, I just know that experience seems to be true. And so what that means is there are larger forces in the world that affect our psyches and affect our spirituality that hinder our sense of gratefulness, gratitude, love, and compassion. And I think we need to be conscious of those forces in order to counteract them, in order to be intentional about nurturing ourselves spiritually and nurturing ourselves relationally so that our own spiritual life and joy and celebration of life, so that others don't get the power to rob us of that life. And this sermon is a bit about that. And I thought I would begin with two stories, one from our Christian tradition and one from our Buddhist tradition, that are remarkably similar. And in looking at these stories, I was reminded of a theologian, a conservative theologian, when I was at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. When I first got to that campus, there was a theologian, Dale Moody, who was going around talking about cheap grace. And he was going to different churches and talking about cheap grace. And I'm going, I've never heard those two words put together before, cheap grace. But what he was saying was that people who have a religious sensibility and affirm religious beliefs but don't practice in accordance to those beliefs live by cheap grace. And I think that when we look at the part of the Gospel of Luke where a certain young man came up to Jesus and he said, "What must I do to have eternal life?" We get a clue, because he says, "What must I do to have eternal life?" And Jesus says, "Well, obey the commandments. You know the commandments from your faith tradition." And the young man says, "I already do that." Well, when that happens, we know that something else is stirring in that young man, because he's not satisfied, because he's still seeking something. And so then he says to Jesus, I already do that. And then Jesus says to him, "Give up your wealth, give up the things you own, and give it to the poor, and then you can follow me." he walks away sad because he's not going to give up his wealth. And somehow he's so attached to that. The point I want to highlight on that story is that there is a practice to spirituality. There is a practice to it. It just doesn't happen. And the same thing happens in the tradition of Buddha. A young holy man comes up to Buddha and says, "What must I do that after I die I will live with Brahma?" And Buddha says, "You must practice compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. You must practice these. You must do something." And I'm always reminded of that theologian talking about cheap grace, to say we have beliefs, to say we have principles. Do we have a practice that goes with them? And the reason I bring that up is in my study, in my trying to gather some thoughts about gratitude and a sense of gratefulness in life, I found a peculiar thing that connects these stories just to that sense of gratitude. And I thought I'd talk a minute about the different types of gratitude. Stuart Hiltner, who is a theologian in the pastoral care and counseling movement, one of the founders, he says there's several types of gratitude. He says there's a reactive gratitude. And the reactive gratitude would be something like when somebody, say, is struggling with an addiction and is confronted about the addiction and apologizes, and the person says something like, "Well, don't do it again," and they go, "Phew, I am so grateful I got out of that." Or a reactive gratitude might be, I get pulled over for a ticket speeding, and I look at the officer, and I know the officer, and I immediately feel a great sense of gratitude because I know I'm not going to get the ticket. But that doesn't stop me from speeding. I go back to the destructive behavior, but I have an immediate sense of gratitude. And he also points at something else. When we live in a sense of reactive gratitude, where we're okay with, where we feel good about getting by with this or getting by with this, that he makes the point that we have a difficulty in our culture living with a sense of gratitude that has continuity through time. That we don't live out of a sense of gratitude. That a sense of gratitude isn't foundational, constitutional with who we are as human beings. We feel it episodically. We feel it periodically. But it's not a guiding force in our lives on our everyday decision-making process. And last week when we talked about the difference, the movement toward the center of spirituality in Christianity and Buddhism, again, we talked about living out of a sense of love and living out of a sense of compassion. And now we have this foundational, how do we live out of a sense of gratitude? And I will ask you and myself to slow down a minute and let go of the little I and breathe in the big I, the great I, and remember a time when you felt a profound sense of gratitude. Where you were given something or somebody said something to you and it was just a gracious moment in time and you felt that sense of gratitude. And that gratitude for a moment in your life lasted and influenced how you were for the next bit of time, for how you made decisions, for how you related to other people. I remember my high school wrestling coach, when I was in junior college, was going through some difficult times in wrestling in junior college, and I wasn't going to be able to go the next semester. And he said, I used to go back to the high school and wrestle with them when I could. And he said, "Why not?" And I said, "Well, this semester I can't afford it." And he said, "I will pay your tuition this semester." I remember it was $181. Can you imagine? $181 at a community college. Those were the good days, believe me. And I said, "Well, I don't know, you know, when I'll be able to pay you back." He said, "Don't pay me back. You do the same for somebody else." And what he was doing at that point, he was installing in me a sense of gratitude that where my life would move forward, I would have that in me. It wasn't a giving back and squaring up. It was a gracious thing that he did to me, that he did with me. And I'll never forget it. And there are times when I do pass that on in various ways, and it may be because of that very event. And when you feel that sense of gratitude, do you live out of it? Is it foundational to your values? Does it move you? Is it influential in your decision-making process? I have to share this day. I just about cried this morning when I got up and I looked at the news, maybe an addiction in itself, and saw the news that there is a person saying about a particular party, we need to take a stand to make sure universal health care does not happen, because if universal health care happens, it will eliminate our party. It's true. It's absolutely true. And the same people saying that are having their health care paid for by somebody else. And it wasn't about the need for health care. It wasn't about the need of the citizens who need health care. That wasn't the driving force. It was about something else. So it wasn't care about people. It wasn't a community decision. It wasn't a decision out of compassion. It wasn't a decision out of love. It wasn't a decision out of gratefulness. It was a decision out of that small eye that cries when it doesn't get its way. It was a selfish decision about, and if it's time for parties to drift away, if it's time for the evolutionary process of a culture to move and for some thought processes that held us together for a while to drift away, then it's time for that. But I felt it was so sad. It may be because I was working on this sermon, and I've been trying to, as I'm working on a sermon, I try to get a feel for the sermon, and so I try to live with that sense of gratefulness through time. And what I discovered was, when you live with this sense of gratefulness and you move through time with that sense of gratefulness, you're more sensitive to things. Emotionally, you're more vulnerable. And you do make different decisions. And I do think differently when I live that way. It's not just about being grateful for gifts and things. It's about being grateful for life. So Stuart Hiltner says, and this is where it was curious, he says at the end of his conversation about gratitude, he said, in our world and in our society, we have to practice gratitude. We have to practice feeling grateful. It's not going to come to us naturally. Maybe it does for some. I don't know, but I just found it curious. How do you practice gratefulness? How do you practice love, compassion? How do you practice letting go of the things that you need to let go of to achieve the spiritual sense about yourself that you need to achieve when you love the things you're attached to? How do you do that? So we have Stuart Hiltner, one of the founders of the pastoral counseling movement in our country. We have teachings of Jesus, we have the teachings of Buddha, and they all say, practice. We have to practice. So what is it that we're going to practice? How is it that we're going to practice that? And my hunch is that whatever memory you experienced, if you were able to, and if not, when you leave here, whatever memory you brought up into your mind about that feeling of gratefulness, that profound sense of gratefulness, if you've ever had that feeling, the practicing of that may be living in that memory, and strengthening that feeling would be the practice of it. I know in our spiritual formation, in our growth, I know that a sense of gratitude moves us away from resentment to the sense of gratitude. So that's a key. If I find myself in my own head talking negative about myself or somebody else, especially from the history, and I'm holding on to resentment, A key to working through if we struggle with addictions is resentment. When I'm struggling with resentment, well, what a profound sense of gratitude does is it moves us away from resentment being normalized in our lives. That's one thing it does. He also says something else curious. He says that living in a frame of waiting moves us from illusionary living to recognizing reality. I thought that was an odd way to put that. Living and waiting in life, I guess being patient, or not demanding things immediately, or not moving quickly through life. What was it? I think it was Arnold Palmer who said, if you don't recognize the different shades of green on the golf course, you ought not be on the golf course. Don't move through life quickly, and when we move through life a bit slower, do we recognize reality more clearly? I know that when I ride my bike or I walk, sometimes a distance, that I'll notice things on the side of the road, over the hill, past a guardrail, or something over here. I would never notice from the car. I mean, the car, I just zoom by that life. But when I walk, I pay attention to it. You know, so to move more slowly would reality come about. It helps us move from comparing ourselves to others. It moves into, when we stop comparing ourselves to others, we move, I think, into a greater depth of community living because we can be together without comparing ourselves to others, being able to move past a sense of envy. Moving from there to a thought about who we are as human beings and how we make meaning out of our lives, I'm going to sound the alarm. Just a bit late. That when we move through time a bit more slowly, when we live out of a sense of compassion, a sense of gratitude, and out of a sense of love, we have more power to author our own stories. When we are moving quickly, when we are not pondering what's going on in life, when we are not journeying inward, we're in danger of somebody else authoring our stories. A person who is a narrative therapist, Michael White, writes this: meaning is derived through the structuring of experiences and stories, and the performance of these stories constitutes the lives that we have in relationships. And I think why that is important in the here and now to recognize that there are stories. Our life is a story. It does have a plot to it. And if we are not careful, somebody else will be more than glad to write your story for you. For instance, a quote from a marketer: in this disruptive age, the power of stories is becoming recognized as an important tool. Story becomes a tool. It is a move from cold, hard facts. He's talking about marketing. Is it a move from cold, hard facts to warm and fluid narratives? People crave a human connection with the companies whose products they buy. Now, I didn't know that I crave a connection to the product I buy. But I'll tell you, as a kid, people who liked Ford trucks would fight people who had Chevy trucks. I'll tell you today, there will be people who are rooting in my home for Miami Dolphins against the New England Patriots. Both products, both images, both symbols. Somebody else is writing your stories. Companies must learn to go beyond telling their own stories to listening and understanding the customer story. If I'm not practicing my spirituality, moving toward living out of a sense of gratefulness, experiencing that passion and that deep sense of gratitude, that deep sense of compassion, that deep sense of love, if these are not foundational to who I am as a human being, and I'm not moving in that direction as part of my spiritual life, I'm vulnerable to somebody writing a story for my life that I will live out that I don't like. How many of you have ever caught yourself doing things that after you've done them, you would have preferred not to do? Well, my question is, who wrote that story? Because if I were writing my story, I would not have put that in my story. Well, if I would not have put that in my story, who did? Who did? Would Stuart Hiltner, Jesus, Buddha, any of the religious leaders, me today, you to me? What we're saying is it is important and it is a mature process that we start writing our own story, taking responsibility for ourselves as adults, not being vulnerable and manipulated by others to write our story for us. If we do that, if we work and practice our spiritual lives moving in that direction, we will fulfill the promise of the seven principles we say every week. It will be a natural outcome. Because when love and compassion and gratitude is the foundation of who we are as a people, those seven principles are natural outcomes. They just happen. Gratitude is a form of transformative process that we can engage in and we can accomplish. But we have to practice.